in the world. And yeah, there's a lot going on. And moving on into the middle, this is now 1880. Sorry for the way the numbers are aligned. It's actually supposed to be 1880. But anyway, this is the map of Africa in 1880. Now you can kind of see where colonial powers in the first map haven't really, I mean, there's reports of colonial powers in Africa, but it wasn't actually a full force until later on in the 1600s, when obviously they supposedly had made slavery, I think it was 1619, they established it as actual trade. But in the 1500s, there was colonial influence there. But again, you know, fast forward now to 1880, you can now see there's a bit more of a divide in terms of the actual countries, the names as well, you know, and it gets worse. So the last image now, is as we're seeing, is basically Africa today. And this is a map in 1914, after the Berlin Conference in 1884. And what you're seeing here really is a battle between Britain and France, basically, because Britain's obviously taken over quite a lot of the north and south and parts of the west of Africa as well, and vice versa with France. I specifically picked this one so you can see which country each took a piece of the pie of Africa. So yeah, next slide. Now, some of you may be familiar with these guys. You should be, really, but if you're not, then it's fine. I can quickly run through them. So you've got Marcus Messiah Garvey on the left, and I've written obviously the days that they were born to the day that they died or were assassinated. Next person is Patrice Lumumba. Next person is Malcolm X, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, obviously, and Haile Selassie. Now, besides Marcus Messiah Garvey, I've picked these leaders in specific, like, sort of time order, because at one point during the 60s, and if, I think it was early, what, maybe 1965, they were actually really trying to come together and establish a African Union, you know, an African society. So as you're seeing today, the European Union form, these guys had the idea from philosophers and people like Marcus Messiah Garvey and whatnot. Now, unfortunately, as we know, some of their stories, they were all assassinated in horrible ways. As you can see, that's Ghana's first president, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah. You know, we know how he all died. I was actually quite shocked to learn a few years ago that he died in Romania. Mm. Yeah, which was quite interesting, because, you know, Haile Selassie, Marcus Messiah Garvey, and maybe, I know, I don't think Patrice Lumumba, but the rest of them all died in foreign land. Mm. So what they have in common is that they were killed alongside Africans and obviously Europeans, heads of state, so like the CIA, certain obviously presidents that were in charge at the time that ordered hits on them. And it's quite sad, because, you know, if this did work in 1960, our entire life would have been different right now. And I feel like we wouldn't even be here on this probably Zoom webinar talking about solving this particular problem. We probably would be in another room discussing another way to invent something very amazing or creative. So it's quite sad. But I pick these guys specifically because obviously I want you guys to understand the common mistake that these people made from what I've researched. They, one, trusted in people that they that never really acquired skill or had skill sets. Two, they never really had security. And when I'm going to get to the security part in the last slide, but with the whole concept of security, it's not just a physical force, it's a mental force and also a economic structure and force as well. So if you go on to the next slide, please. Again, any questions you can ask in the Q&A. Literally, I know it's a few slides, but I'm all ears. Now, this table here, I don't know if you've got any economic guys in the group. You probably do, that have actually studied economics and whatnot. You guys will probably be able to help me a bit more on the Q&A sides, reiterate some of the definition of some of these terms. But I've been reading this book called Powernomics by a guy called Dr. Claude Anderson. I've been hearing about the book for years, for ages, but I never really kind of, I'm not even saying took to it, but I never really had the, you know, the desire to read it. But as I started to watch a lot of more, you know, black documentaries, documentaries that were specifying in terms of the economy and how black people can obviously work together. So for example, in America, there was a town in, called Tulsa, Oklahoma. And literally, that was the first Wall Street, or Black Wall Street, as you would call it, where Black people were actually coming together and working together and practicing group economics. You know, they had their own bakeries, they had their own shoe factories, you know, their own jewelry companies. Like, literally, it was crazy. Unfortunately, that place is no longer with us again, because that during that time, the Ku Klux Klan was quite heavily prevalent. And, you know, back and forth with the Black leaders in that particular town, they were fighting the Ku Klux Klan. Then they lost the battle on the ground. So the Black people actually won. You know, they fended off the Ku Klux Klan. And I think later on that same day, a plane flew over and started dropping air bombs. And it's funny because that's the actual, well, it's not funny, but it's ironic. That's the first city in the entire world that actually was bombed by air.
Oh my gosh.
You know, so I'm showing you these examples to show you how powerful we are when we come together, how scared, you know, these elite businesses or dominant people in society, you know, become. Now, anyway, I want to run through this table. The short end of it is this. At the top, you're seeing the National Black Empowerment Plan and National Plan with New Tools Vision and EFO Aggression and Vertical Integration. So this was designed by Dr. Claude Anderson, who's also studied economics. And it said, basically, these are the things that a society of Black people should follow in order to prosper in where they are. So it wasn't designed specifically for America or specifically for Europe. It's just specifically for us.
Yeah.
And as you go into the middle part of the graph now, where you see it says on the left-hand side, eliminate internal impediments to Black self-empowerment. You've got mindset. Operate in a broad sense of Black community. It also has avoid external cross-purpose and horizontal activities. Now, just looking at graph, just looking at the section number on the first bit of the middle graph where it says eliminate internal impediments to Black self-empowerment,
yeah.
Already, you can already see where the problem is, because it is very, very, very important that we understand the things that stop us from being ourselves. So for example, those small impediments could be you being at work, for those ladies that work in the business sector in the city, your boss may not like your afro hair, so you have to wear a wig or straighten your hair.
Imagine.
Guys as well, you know, growing your beards or having an afro, your boss again may say, look, like, you know, you need to keep it short, cut and clean. Some of you who are actually native born from Ghana may not be able to speak tree at your workplace in front of people just because of embarrassment. These are the small internal impediments that Dr. Clarence was talking about, that we would obviously need to overcome or be able to be in a space where we can practice it in order to start. Once you get that out of the way, you're able to operate on a broad sense of Black community. So you start to think of, okay, how am I being Black, or how am I living Black? You know, when I go outside on my road, am I spending with Black people? Am I shopping with Black people? You know, am I creating conversations with Black people? So I'm coming from, some people live in the suburbs, some people don't. So it's also, again, about considering that and taking that into consideration. Now, again, avoid external cross-purpose and horizontal activities. You could be a pastor, or you could be a... I don't know, let's just say someone that's prominent in the council, you know, that could be, it could be a local MP. You need to understand that if, in order for this plan to work, that you may be compromised if you're in those positions. Not to say that you can't be them, but in the sense of the fact that when you're saying certain things, eventually it's going to come out. So you're not all those guys that do like activism and mm-hmm. all those activists and whatnot. You find that if they're working in Sainsbury's or Tesco, and then their boss goes on their Twitter and sees them saying, yeah, Black Lives Matter, and they're leading the march, they tend to get fired. Mm-hmm. Because most of those places there don't want to be associated with this particular plan. Now, again, if you're doing it for Chinese people, or if you're doing it for, you know, the Jewish society, you see there's a different kind of energy that gets put towards you. More times employers allow it, or sometimes you may find that that particular employer is in that same kind of organization as what I'm talking about. So you may be compromised in that position. So that's something for you to also think about as well. Now, as we go deeper and deeper to the bottom, it says establish geographical turf and physical communities. Now, that's where we come in as YGP. You know, going back to Ghana, I'm going to use Ghana as a base because obviously that's something we all recognize at the moment. Let's just say, for example, we all went to Ghana, right? And if you look at the bottom now, we started to design our schools for group competitiveness. We started to look into building more group-based and alternative economic structures. We definitely went into politics and started to look at the machinery of how politics are in Ghana and also expand on traditional roles of black churches. You see, the church part at the end is very important because Ghana right now is near enough, I would say from what I've seen growing up and going there, it's near enough run by most of the churches there. Everybody goes to church. The pastors there have a lot of power and influence. So if you're going to go into somewhere like Ghana, especially in most parts of Africa, and you're going to try your best to implement this sort of structure or plan, this is a method and a way of getting in. Now, once you go into these places, you're going to have to now continue on. So at the bottom, that last sort of graphs at the bottom, it says equip students to achieve the national plan.
I'm sorry, guys.
And that's why it's cool. Equip students to achieve a national plan. You've got to practice group economics, group politics, and then practice civil religious prosperity. These things are very, very important because what this does now is once we've established that lower, that second to last lower graph, once we've gone into Ghana, at the end, you have to carry on the same chain. Notice in this particular graph here, I haven't mentioned once of anyone assuming to be a leader or anyone assuming to be in charge because there's not one person or there's not one individual that's responsible for this. It's everybody together as a collective, you know. And with the last slide I showed you before, with all that, the leaders and whatnot, that was their key problem. They became black leaders.
This one, yeah.
Yeah, this one here, yeah. They became black leaders. And yes, the idea in terms of you being that person is very inspirational. Yes, some of us wouldn't have even be here discussing this if it wasn't for these people. But you need to understand that black leaders make it easy to be targeted. And also at the same time, you carry the burden of everybody else. So it enables the common black person to be lazy.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll leave it to so-and-so. Oh, I'll leave it to Malcolm X. He's going to find a way for us. Oh, no, Marcus Messiah Garvey. Or the common speech you hear today is, oh, we need a leader that's going to push the country forward. Or we need someone that's going to... It's not going to happen. It never will happen. Because that system, as you can see right now, is not our way of living. So with this graph here, to come to a close, I would just... I mean, I can send it out to whoever needs it and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But this is a small blueprint on how to actually start. I mean, again, we can go through this this whole entire structure in front, you know, in actual groups of black people, even just as an experiment to see how hypothetically it would be. And I can guarantee you, the first part where we talk about the eliminating internal impediments, that's even going to be the most hardest part, I personally feel, because a lot of people haven't got overcome that first. They haven't really gone through that internally and dealt with that on a personal level, because it's important. This is how black people stick together, and this is how we can actually work together and make our current situation no longer a struggle but a way of life.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah,
thank you.
That's the end. I'm done.
Thank you so very much. Yeah, so it's actually like cool. 7. I'm going to stop recording, and obviously we'll discuss that side if you want it to be published or not. But I just thought I'd capture this and then stop recording at this point onwards. But it's good to capture the information that you have so eloquently put together, Jesse. This has been very insightful. Even going back to this, I've never seen powerful men in this timeline in this way. It's always been like different parts of like the internet, and you see maybe one different places, and it's good to see that. It's good to see the journey from being done like leaders to now looking at it from a more community group led, looking at this model looks really bad. I think that's what's happening Africa is awake because of the common mindset to share information across the diaspora, and everybody kind of saying, no, we're no longer segregated across our individual countries, but we are African people, we are Black people, we also look at our brothers. They say it's the, is it far Africa or the Western?
Far West Africa, they used to call it.
Exactly. So
that's what Marcus Garvey was calling it. Yeah,
Caribbean, the Caribbean. Exactly. So we also, that, and we've all come together that we are one. I think, yeah, changes are definitely happening. So this has been quite insightful. I'm going to stop waffling because that's not doing any justice to your amazing.
Nah, it's cool, man. It's cool. Like I said, when you're ready to do the Q&A, we open it up, boy, because I know there's a lot of people with questions.
Yeah, I'm going to
stop. I'm here.
Perfect. So we have 20 members now who've tuned in. I'm going to stop sharing and I'm going to ask for questions at this point, because this is the point where we were discussing earlier on in YGP these discussions of empowerment in Africa. It was a very heated debate, so much so I asked Jesse to not to try and hold it back and, you know, not to get too involved, because it will open up so much unpacking of Africa and what to do. So to those of you that were on the YGP chat, that were perhaps listening, or to anyone that has seen this presentation and wants to actually voice questions or perhaps make a point, a statement to add on to this, it'll be amazing. I'm gonna, sorry, let me stop sharing because it's not. I'm gonna stop recording.